Yes, I'd also like to announce that Chair Hale couldn't make it, so I will be the chair for tonight.
And staff, thanks you, Commissioner Munoz, taking over the chair this evening. Continuing with the roll call, Commissioner Sedaris?
Present.
Commissioner Ayoub?
Present.
Commissioner Bates?
Present.
Commissioner Crowley?
Present.
And let the record show that obviously Commissioner Hale is out, and Commissioner O'Toole did call in with a family emergency, and I will turn it back to the chair.
Okay, thank you. Next on the agenda is commissioners' reports and announcements. Any commissioners have any reports? Anything to announce? Mm-hmm. Joe, Mr. Woods, do you have anything? Any announcements?
You bet I do. If everyone was going to allow me to announce the annual spaghetti dinner fundraiser, it's this Friday. It starts at 4:30. It ends at 7, so get there while the pasta and bread's hot. Tickets can be purchased at the Recreation Parks Department or the Senior Office, which is also at the Community Center. Again, that's a Dixon Halfley annual spaghetti dinner fundraiser the foundation and the commission puts on to raise monies for scholarships for the youth to participate in youth activities throughout the year, sports and after-school activities. So it's a terrific fundraiser. It's one of our big ones. We have a ton of raffle tickets. We have a ton of raffle tickets we want you to buy, but the prizes have been coming in from local merchants, and they're terrific, terrific list. And we also have, besides raffle tickets, we have door prizes as well. So with your ticket to the dinner, you're automatically into the door prize. So there's a good chance you're going to win some great prize. You're definitely going to get some good eats, and it's going to be a very positive community experience and benefits everybody. So thanks for letting me make the announcement.
Okay, thank you. And I'd also like to let the public know that the commissioners are also selling tickets, so if anyone's interested and you see us out there, just go ahead and ask. Okay, next on the agenda is presentations. We have none tonight. So we will move on to public comment period.
Ooh.
And that would be at the public hearing where they would make their presentation?
No, this item is not a public hearing item. Certainly they can make comments during the public comment period, which you just opened.
Okay. So any members of the audience wishing to address the commission on any matter other than the public hearing items may do so at this time. Comments are generally limited to 3 minutes. So please step forward to the podium and just state your name.
My name is Rebecca Aro. I'm the president of the Morro Bay Garden Club. And I wanted to give a little brief history of our event that we're going to be having. And then I'll open up for questions if you have any questions. The Morro Bay Garden Club is sponsoring Dahlia Days on August 26th and 27th, 2010. The theme for this year's event is dancing attendance and local group participation. Our club's membership has grown as well, but we are still a fledgling organization. We currently have 17 members who have worked very hard over the past few years to bring Dahlia Days to our community. And a brief discussion. Last year, we moved the event from St. Timothy's Parish Hall to the Morro Bay Community Center. The community center is better suited to accommodate Dahlia Days, especially now that we have grown from only a few participants to over 100. For Dahlia Days 2010, we are inviting teams from our local 4-H group, the Morro Bay Historical Society, a children's dance company, local artists, and floral arrangement groups. Other area garden clubs are invited, and Dahlia growers will participate. We are adding a Friday evening wine and cheese reception with a guest speaker, Mr. Kevin Larkin, the current vice president of the National Dahlia Growers Society. He's from Corralitos, California. We will also feature an art in bloom display pairing local artists' work with floral designs created by local gardening and floral design groups. The Saturday program will include cut dahlia specimens. Everyone is invited to bring cut dahlias to display. For the past few years, Morro Bay Garden Club members have created dahlia posters and placed them at local nurseries, encouraging shoppers to buy dahlia tubers and plant them early in the summer so the blooms will be ready for dahlia days in August. By the way, our festival is in August because that's the time when California dahlias are at their best. Dahlia growers love to show off their flowers. Joe and Jill Sobel from San Luis Obispo will be bringing literally hundreds of dahlias to Dahlia Days 2010. If you can imagine a room full of blooms that range from about an inch to well over 10 inches. And the colors are amazing. Some are soft and demure, while others are really deep, dark, and electric. My neighbor actually said that he thought that my blue dahlia was irradiated. Interest in gardening is growing in the United States, particularly in the past few years. Depending on which poll you read, gardening is either the number 5 or the number 7 most popular hobby in this country. It does lag behind watching television. By promoting Dahlia Days, Morro Bay could capitalize on this trend and bring visitors to our town in sufficient numbers to more than offset the expense of rental costs for the community center. Thank you. Do any of you have any questions?
Commissioners, have any questions?
Yeah, generally a public comment. We don't have answers and questions, but I believe we're going to try to get your item up front. And so if you could stick around, we might have some questions then.
Okay, anyone else wish to address the commission at this time? Okay, seeing no one else, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Is there any comments on the public comments from the commissioners? No? Okay. So we'll move on to item A. Okay. Since the public is here on item D1, I would entertain a motion to move agenda D1. Up in front of item A, consent calendar.
I make a motion.
Give me a second.
I second the motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. None opposed? Okay, so we'll move on to item D1. Review of the co-sponsorship request from Morro Bay Garden Club for the Dahlia Days event. Mr. Woods.
Good evening again, Chair Munoz and Commission. The Morro Bay Garden Club has requested a co-sponsorship from the City of Morro Bay to host their annual Dahlia Days event or celebration, which celebrates the city flower, and they're scheduling this event on August the 27th and the 28th. As protocol, the Recreation and Parks Commission is asked to review and make a recommendation to staff on this request. Brief history illustrates the purpose of discussion. The mid-last year, City Council requested staff review the guidelines for the co-sponsorship with the Recreation Parks Commission and present our findings and recommendations to them at their October 12th meeting in 2009. I attach those staff reports for your review as well as the minutes that were settled by Council. To summarize the motion I put in, there are three events, three conditions in which the council is looking for in co-sponsorships. One is the event is held off-season and defined as November the 1st through April the 30th. The second being the event be a multiple day or a single day with financial with significant financial return to the City of Morro Bay. And then the third condition, we're requesting party as a nonprofit organization. So those are the three conditions that the City Council would like us to meet when we're addressing co-sponsorships. That motion was also amended, a friendly amendment, that would ask the Recreation Parks Department to add more delineating conditions to these to the application so we can better define the conditions, so that to better define if an event is truly worthy of co-sponsorship or not. So we haven't done any additional delineation. The application that you see from the Garden Club is the current application that we use. On the very end of that application, you'll see that there's a department review. I apologize for my signature not being on that, but I have signed the one at the office. And then it comes for your review, and then it will come back to the department for approval. If those two decisions are not in sync, then there's an appeal to the City Council. And there's a chance that if you are to approve this or not approve this, whatever conditions, it would go to City Council for final approval if it's warranted. Tonight's request from the Garden Club for the Dahlia Days is their fifth annual event. They're seeking support not only for the Dahlia itself, the city flower, but also exposure to entice new members and also to bring visitors from out of the area into our town. They're estimating this 2-day event at about 200 to 300 participants. And obviously it's scheduled in August for the blooming factor of the flowers. And that's one of the conditions that you may want to discuss this evening. It's not a criteria that's been met as City Council lays out, but if you're looking to say this particular condition is unique for this event, and then you can formulate a recommendation based on that, and staff can bring it back to Council, or you can base your own opinions on the conditions as they're set forth. The event that the Garden Club has, they're advertising outside of the county, which is a huge plus. They're also advertising throughout the state. They have plans to go and advertise at the state show in San Francisco, State Dahlia Show. They have been in several magazines. They're trying to advertise locally on TV and radio, as well as getting in some advertisement at the county fair. So they've laid out their application is in for further review. It's in your packet. The financial impact of a co-sponsorship would be the difference between a non-profit group's charges as opposed to a direct charges, which generally where we go when we do a co-sponsorship. So the difference between a non-profit rate and the direct cost rate, it's about $419. The straight rental for the community center, if it was straight up as a nonprofit group, would be $772.50. It's based on the hourly rate and the processing fee, the rental attendant, as well as janitorial. If we were to co-sponsor this event, the fee would go down to $353 and some change. Again, the difference being $419. And the co-sponsorship, there's just direct costs for the auditorium, and there is a processing fee. We do add on, now that I'm turning the page, facility rental and janitorial, and that could also be rolled into the co-sponsorship if we felt we needed to do that. So it would actually reduce the rate by another $180. So somewhere about $170 for a co-sponsored event as opposed to three if we're going to take on the janitorial and the cleaning process. So there's some more that we can co-sponsor than just what's outlined in this particular permit, which is permit 2169. We printed two of those in your packet. So money would be a consideration, but not the only consideration. The revenue difference of $419 could certainly be looked upon as being recouped as indirect contributions to maybe the sales tax, and particularly and also the TOT. Since this is a Friday and Saturday, there will probably be some overnight lodging as well. So we want to make sure the commission's aware of the indirect impacts economically that we have that are positive when there's overnight events, two-day events with overnight stay. So we would hopefully make up some of the revenue there. There's no loss in charging for direct costs. There are direct maintenance costs, direct utility costs. There's just no profit margin there. But like I said, those could be indirect. It's hard to judge those and hard to measure how much those economic impacts are, but I believe that they're out there. That concludes my report. Certainly open up to any questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. And any questions from commissioners?
Does this mean that the City of Morro Bay can, and they have co-sponsored this, the Dahlia Festival before, and the only objection is because price-wise, we're talking dollar signs?
To my knowledge, the Dahlia Days has not been sponsored by the City of Morro Bay since their reuniting in 2006. Am I right?
Right.
And now, if they were sponsored in 1969 for Dahlia celebration, Dahlia Festival, I couldn't tell you. We'd have been, 3 years old as a city, and there could have been a co-sponsorship. I couldn't tell you. But right now, the Garden Club did present a request to be co-sponsored last year. That request went straight to the City Council. They rejected that. But it also sparked a desire to look at the co-sponsorship policies, to look at the procedures, and to set some guidelines. And that's what we talked about earlier. We've gone through the process last year, mid last year. We proposed recommendations to Council, and that's what they've adopted. So the rejection isn't the fact that nobody wanted Dahlia Days. I believe that it was the fact that there was no set policy and they wanted to set a precedent without having some guidelines in place, as opposed to just having it reviewed by the city manager. So now that the policy is in place, the Morro Bay Garden Club has come back and said, we still want a co-sponsorship. We're still requesting it. And as staff's position is I'm going to accept their request and bring it for discussion here. Your recommendation is something that we're going to take either to approve this or to bring it forward to City Council. So hopefully I've answered your question, Commissioner Ayew.
Okay. So do we know if there are any other large events in the city that weekend?
There is not. There is scheduled Dahlia Days. Yeah,
okay.
That we have a permit reservation under their name.
Well, then let's do it. I recommend we do it.
Well, the co-sponsorship, since there's all three criteria are not met, I have a word of caution that we will want to follow protocol, and
okay.
that your recommendation that staff approve this would not fit the guidelines that Council set in front of us, and I would be uncomfortable in proceeding at that particular stage. I would be very comfortable with the strong recommendation from Commission to go to Council and then explaining to them your recommendation on why a condition should be amended, changed, or waived, whatever the case may be, for this particular case.
Okay.
And I'm reminding the commission that there's only one other event currently that is co-sponsored, which is the Bird Festival, which does meet all three of these criteria.
Are there problems with the criteria with it being not in the off-season in a multi-day?
That's a good question, Commissioner Bates. That's exactly why. And the fact is they would love to. I would imagine the group would love to have this thing November the 1st. Be right in there. But there's not going to be any flowers.
Right.
So that's their push, is the August is the optimum time for their festival. It just wouldn't happen. And so if the commission's feeling strongly about that condition and that this particular case may lend itself for an exception, then that's something you'd want to agree upon and then direct me to approach Council with that.
And this organization is a nonprofit, right? Yes, so that is one criteria met, right? One out of three? Well, I personally recommend that we do this for all nonprofit organizations and look at the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is bringing in people to Morro Bay. And there's a lot of talk about having Morro Bay be a convention center, and this is one step in that direction. And if we want to be supportive of that, bringing people in, this is another way we can do that.
May I make a comment, Chair?
Mm-hmm.
To open the floodgates to all your nonprofit organizations would certainly dwindle down our revenue stream. And I know it may be just the obvious, but I want to make sure that we're on the same page, that there are criteria out there to limit the amount of subsidies, and it's not really a subsidy per se, but it's close. It's about as close as you can get. So we want to make sure that other nonprofits, and we have quite a few, about 70% of your use in facilities comes from nonprofit organizations that are particularly fundraising.
Yeah, I would emphasize the indirect financial return, you know, with the overnight stays and the shopping and...
Yes, and that was the second criteria, and they said that they met one. They actually meet both. They meet they have a multiple day. So there's two out of the three that are minimum. But there's other criteria in the packet that we looked at, their advertisement, just their purpose, what they're promoting, and so forth. And I think they do have a program that's well-suited for the community.
Right, I also agree because... you know, considering that they bloom in August, you know, I could see waiving that portion for this event, and then also condition number two, it is going to begin on Friday. Is that correct? With the reception from 1:30 to 7:30, so it did meet the multi-day. Because you're going to be Friday and Saturday, so people would be coming in if they were coming in from out of town on Friday, and then hopefully possibly staying through Sunday. So you would have that. And then, of course, they're a nonprofit group, which is stated on their application. So I think at this point, if the commission felt that they would want to go forward with the co-sponsorship, that's a motion that we would need. And also to waive, because of the dates of the flowers, we would have to put that in our recommendation. And then also just the co-sponsorship and leave the facility attendant and janitorial on there. Because Joe did say we could waive that also, but I would think we probably would leave that.
I need to jump in for a correction. We would not be waiving those fees.
Okay.
And they would be part of our co-sponsorship.
Co-sponsorship, right. Sorry, long term.
I just wanted waivers come from
it's
council,
be,
and we want to make sure we don't step
correct.
On their toes.
Right.
Certainly.
Right. So if that's what the commission would like to do, we would need to make a recommendation to put those items stated.
I agree with you.
I think council is also wanting some delineation as far as, you know, if we do this for Dahlia Days, maybe we should set forth some standards for other nonprofits as well.
I believe that there's only, 14 or 17 of you only in the group, and I think that, I mean, they need all the help they can get. So let's do it.
We would have to, like I say, make a motion stating that, and also stating that because they bloom in August, that's why we would waive it for this particular event.
So, in other words, we're keeping all of the criteria. It's just that we're waiving one this time for this one organization. We're not changing anything, really.
Correct, unless commissioners had a suggestion to also forward to council, changing for future recommendations. Otherwise, it would just be for this one time, considering that it's, like I say, they bloom in August versus November through April.
Mr. Woods, are you looking for a recommendation on the particular November 1 through April 30 to send back to council in addition to a recommendation on whether we co-sponsor the event or not?
Staff is, thank you for the question, Commissioner Bates. What we're looking for generally is if the commission feels strongly about co-sponsoring the event and knowing that it doesn't meet all three criteria that council set, you'd want to state in a motion that you're requesting you would support the co-sponsorship, and you're going to ask staff to present this request to City Council with the consideration of waiving Condition 1, which is the time of year, based on the uniqueness of Dahlia Days that bloom in August and also represents the city's flower. So something along that lines. And I don't want to put words in the commissioner's mouth, but it sounds like everyone's in support of Dahlia Days and co-sponsoring it. In order to do that, council has to approve it, and we've got to come up with a recommendation. And I think that instead of trying to change the entire policy for everybody hereafter, that we recognize that you're recognizing the uniqueness and the fact that it's a 2 or 3 months off calendar is something that you're willing to look at and support still, and then we'll bring it to council, and then they can review it at their level. So hopefully that has some clarification.
I'd like to make a motion that the commission's support the co-sponsorship of the Dahlia Days, and also the janitorial and attendant, with the recommendation to council that we waive the particular time because of the uniqueness of the event.
I'll second.
Do you have a vote?
Yeah, was that clear enough for staff on that? Yeah, okay. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None.
And staff will try to get this on the next available agenda at City Council. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to item A, consent calendar. If there's any commissioners that would like to pull any of the items A1 through 4, they may do so. Otherwise, I would look for a motion to accept the consent calendar items A1 through 4 for file. Want to pull any items?
I'd like to make a motion to accept the items.
I second them.
Okay, we have a first and second, and all in favor?
Aye.
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 And opposed? No. Motion.
One clarification, you said you're going to you want to motion the items, and we want to make sure that we go A1 through A4. That was your intent?
A1 and A4 to file.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to item B, public hearings. Recreation and Parks Department staff will present the staff report and recommendation and respond to questions from the commissioners. So at this point, we'll move on to the first item, B1. We'll take these separately also, by the way. So B1 would be our first item for discussion, and that's discussion on guidelines for public area use permit.
Thank you, Chairman Nielsen, Commission. Again, B1 is the discussion of guidelines for public air use permits. This item is brought to you on request from City Council. They wanted to review how staff was processing applications and what the procedures were that we undertook when applications came in. The decision was to bring it to you first for discussion and to flesh out some things that you may think are of concern that need to be changed, modified, and so forth. When the public properties are not in use by the city, they are made available for public groups or individuals, and they're used for social, cultural, and recreational activities. Such of use needs to requires an application and a permit, and that is done through the Morro Bay Recreation and Parks Department. That is pursuant to Municipal Code 2.24, that when facilities are not in use, that we make them available to the community. We do so in accordance with the rules and the policies set forth in the public air use permit. Those particular policies and rules have been reviewed by the Recreation and Parks Commission and adopted. So changes could certainly take place here as long as they're not conflicting with other city ordinances. We do so on a case by case. So public parks and open space is an applicant-driven service. When applications for use are processed on a first-come, first-serve, and a case by case. Once the permit application is found to be in good order and compliance with the guidelines that have been adopted by the RPC, the applicant's granted use for either a park or the open space. If there is a refusal, there is an appeals process, and that goes to City Council. I have yet to see that. But organizations or persons who want to use public properties for their own activities, there are six criteria, and I'll go through them rather quickly. Persons or groups proposing to erect or maintain a table, booth, or a similar structure. Groups of persons exceeding 75 people. Persons or groups desiring to reserve a park or an open space for a limited time for their exclusive use. Any persons or groups desiring to make solicitations or sales. Any person desiring to hold a contest, demonstration, exhibit in a park or a facility which admissions or an entrance fee has been charged. And the last condition requiring a permit is any person or group engaging in the sale or consumption of alcoholic beverages. And that's also defined in Chapter 9 further in the Municipal Code. And applications for public use are available at our office, and they're also available on our website. So the applications are readily available. And we've attached one with the conditions in your packet. After application comes in, draft conditions are developed, and they are forwarded to other department heads for review and comment. Oftentimes, when an event is large in nature, and recently we had our special events team meeting, which we meet on the second Thursday of the month, try to get some consistency, and we reviewed the kite parade that's coming up, as well as the kite festival. We also reviewed the Easter sunrise service request at the Rock. We also reviewed the Miracle Miles Rock to Pier Run that's coming up in April as well. So we have several big events that come in, and when those applications come to me again, the draft conditions go out, and then we all get together with the applicant. We think that this meeting is very important, and the applicant starts by explaining their program, their event, what the details and the services and what their expectations are. And then city staff is there for questions and answers, and most importantly, the dialogue of what potential conditions could come up during their event. So things like if there's alcohol, there'll have to be a ID station. There has to be security guards. There's regulations on colors of cups and so forth and so on. So we kind of flush all those details out with the promoter or applicant, if you will, at this particular meeting. And hopefully they're 2 or 3 months in advance. And then we work on conditions. And as we finalize those, I will send out the final draft of the conditions to the applicant and also the department heads. And so everyone's on the same page as far as what is expected of the applicant. And the conditions change from site to site. A wedding at the Pit is going to be different than a music barbecue up at Del Mar Park. So the conditions change, and we bring in those department heads that have the most impact. And those conditions will vary from event to event. So I've discussed our meetings with the special events team. We also get together with, so the next month, we don't review the same events. We review the upcoming events. We also will backtrack and evaluate some past performance of large events. Sometimes they're with the applicant, if we're fortunate. Sometimes they're not with the applicant, they're just with staff. And we would review the conditions and make amendments there and be ready for the next year. What went right, what went wrong, kind of a scenario. And we work through some of those issues. And I think it's very important that, that the team continues to meet and we have this process of department concerns, which brings together the city's concerns, and then we mesh those with the applicant's request, and we find some happy ground there that we both can be successful, because we certainly want every public area use permit to be successful when they come and rent our facilities and open space. That means the space is maintained and presentable in a safe fashion, and it's delivered to us that way after their event. And the event that you see that are coming up, the fees are assessed to those particular permits, but we're not done with the fees. There are conditions and rules, as you've read in the application, that any additional city services will be reimbursed by the applicant. And so you'll see maybe a $300 permit for the car show, but there may be a $15 or $2,000 invoice afterwards for additional city services. And that would be police patrol, you name it, whatever the services is. It's a direct invoice, and then that's paid. And then we clear their deposit and return the deposit form. So that's the latter part of this procedure. So you've gone through submitting the application and then having it being reviewed by staff. And I would bring your attention to the application itself. Since we are reviewing the process, I think you should look at the application. And if there's something that you've gone through and said, why are we asking about this? Or what does this have to do with the public air use permit? Or why don't we ask this particular question? This is the session that you'd want to bring that up. So we get through some of the formalities and try to familiarize ourselves with the event. We ask questions of the applicant so we can get correspondence going. And we also ask for facility. And sometimes it's other, and sometimes it's a designated park. When events are in parks, they don't have exclusive use. There are applicants are always conditioned that any public park, say if you're down at Tidelands and you want to reserve Tidelands for a small gathering, you can't shut down access to that park for the public. And every applicant's aware of public parks remain public parks. Access remains open at all times. So exclusive use of the park is prohibited. However, we do have exclusive use for areas within a park that are reservable, specifically the hillside at Del Mar or the barbecue pit at Lila Kaiser. If you've rented that, then that's your exclusive use during your time, and there's ordinances that allow you to have peace and quiet while you're doing your event and not be harassed. But other areas and larger parks, they're open to the public. So those are part of the conditions that we put on the event. We try to get as much information about the event here as we can. Some events are small in nature. They don't quite meet the criteria, but someone wants a reservation. It might be for a third or fourth grade birthday party, and we will process those permits within the Recreation Parks Department. We will generally not route those around to the entire department heads and other city departments. We keep that in-house. We have their conditions, and we apply those conditions to that permit. And we try not to overwhelm them with frivolous conditions that don't pertain to their event. If something's happening at Del Mar, we'll be specific about conditions at Del Mar. So I would say on the back side, on page 9 of your packet, you'll see policies and use rules. And there's some general rules. I talked about allowing folks to use city facilities and parkland and open space when it's not used for city recreation or any other city activities, provided the event is... I hate to say socially acceptable, but there is some guidelines for conduct, and those are in the municipal code. We don't censor types of events. If someone wants to come in with a country and western band festival, the fact that I don't like country and western doesn't mean I'm not going to pass their permit. I do like country and western, but I'm just, for my point, is that we don't do that. I have several groups come in. We've had music festivals. Sometimes the music is not to the entire community's liking. But all in all, there's been a lot of tolerance. So we've had some big festivals down at 714 Embarcadero. And those come with big conditions. And they're big impact on staff. Not so much my department, even though we were involved in the process of issuing the permit and conducting all the legwork in the beginning. But in the day of the event, it's a big impact on police and fire and other emergency services that we have. And so that's why we try to recuperate those direct costs, because it's an additional burden based placed on the city for that particular event. So the fact that this event's come up, additional services are warranted, and we try to recoup those costs. Day-to-day function, you're not going to have that. And there's an expectation that we have enforcement out there for speeders and people who don't stop at stop signs. And, well, that's taken care of. But when there's special events come on, there's additional detailed, specific tasks that need to be addressed, not only for the safety of the participants, but also for the liability exposure for the applicant. And the overall well-being and exposure for the city of Morro Bay. So there's a lot of things we try to take in consideration when we're passing these permits and placing conditions on them. So we don't take them lightly. A lot of it's just in case things. Emergency access widths are 20 feet. There's proper signage for no parking. That's a big one, the no parking policy that we put on 72 hours. You see a lot of the venues being posted 72 hours before the event that there'll be no parking. And we've added more and more conditions with detail to permits to help the applicant out and not to burden them. And I think for the most part it's been well received. The rules for open space and public property use, there's A through M. If you've gotten a chance to read that, you might need some bifocals. It's kind of fine print. I apologize for that. But if you have any questions regarding any of these items or rules, I should say, I'd be happy to discuss them at this time. And any other rules that would be for the sports facility rental as well. So I would bring it back to the commission for any clarification or questions that they might have.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, any commissioners, or comments?
Have all the prices have gone up on all of your, from the parks, Kaiser, to the Tidelands? Is this all new?
That's an excellent question, Commissioner AU. The fees have gone up for nonprofit organizations. They've gone up to meet the exact cost for the resident groups. So we combine non-resident, nonprofits with resident groups. We try to condense our fee schedule without raising the rates across the board, and that was a discussion we had, I believe, earlier last year prior to the adoption of this year's budget. So, yes, the fees have gone up, not across the board, but definitely for a nonprofit organizations. And it's not by much. I believe I think it went from $34 to $46 a permit. And again, I remind the commissioner that we just set up a four-day event, which is the Morro Bay Cruising Car Show. That total permit was $302. Of that, I believe the Follies has sponsored either $150 or $200. So the fees for the permits are very reasonable, as I understand, the lowest in the county. But there has been some public concern about additional fees that the city charges for support services. And if that's something that we want to discuss, that's fine. I'd be happy to do that now. But I think I've clarified the need for us to be reimbursed for additional services that aren't in our regular core duties or daily tasks. These are special events, and they warrant special insurance. Because you're attracting people for a different cause in a particular area for a specific reason. And when you get that defined, then liability exposures come up. And we always transfer that liability to the applicant. Part of this rules and regulations is that they meet liability endorsements, requirements that endorse the city of Morro Bay as digitally insured, and we check those policies for ratings. But if they don't have insurance, then they can fill out the short form, and we can give them a quote through one of the two of our agencies that provide that coverage. And they're generally getting a very inexpensive premium for the events that they've had. The most expensive, I think, was the Big Bad and the Ugly Surf Contest. And that one was about a $1,000 premium, which is pretty reasonable for an open water event. And generally, those events, we recommend that they take out policies for 3 days, even though they only use them for one, just in case there's a delay and they need to surf the next day, or they drop something off the Friday before, they would be covered, or we would be covered. So little things like that we've addressed. So the insurance policies and requirements are certainly in the process. And that's something that's very consistent. The master fee schedule, if I could go back, is reviewed by City Council and adopted at that level. You went through the grunt work of getting through these this fee matrix, and I appreciate the work earlier. And so far, it's not deterred any nonprofit groups from filing applications for use. And I think that's a positive statement that says, we raise the rates, we increase our revenues, however, we have not overburdened the user, which would in turn, you know, send kind of a ripple through the community. So I'm glad that the groups are still willing to come in and they're still hosting big and fun programs, such as the beer festival and chili cook-off that happened a couple weekends ago. And that was the first annual. A lot of conditions, a lot of planning goes on with the applicant. Also, there's meetings with the applicant and the city, more than just the one. They have special meetings for the control of alcohol and just how the layout's going to go. And oftentimes, the police commander is involved more so than any other department head. And myself. So usually it's police and recreation parks hammering out the final details, even though everyone's involved in the process. So I would just come back to the commission and ask if there's any questions about the policies or the procedures and how we process public area use permits. Because that's something that I want to make sure that if you understand how we process the permit, then the next question would be, the rules and regulations that pertain to those permits, are they of question? Do you want to review them in any more detail?
Oh, I would just ask if there's any complaints from the public that we need to consider and maybe rearranging the wording or the rules and regulations from prior events.
I have not received any formal complaints about any policy or rule.
Okay.
There has been some opposition from several event holders or applicants, if you will, regarding Section 1, Rules for Open Space and Public Property Use, Item F, which is groups conducting sales will be assessed a percentage of the gross or a flat fee. That's something that's been in this particular permit since I've been here. Back in the 80s, 89. That's how long. It's been over 20 years that concession has been in here. And it's also below in your sports facility rental, which is Section 2, and I can reference Item G. And currently we have a T-shirt, guy goes out, the T-shirt man, for anything, any better name. He's out there at the Kaiser at the summertime girls softball slam, and he makes up T-shirts right there on the spot, customized. And we do have a 10% gross that we take after his concessions are over. So it isn't something that's brand new. There's been other formulas where we've had 10% of the door. We've had 10% of alcohol sales or 10% of the concession sales, even if they're soft drinks.
So how is that decided then, whether it's a gross or a flat fee?
It's city staff working with the applicant and based on what type of event it is. I would imagine a flat fee would come into play when there's a lot of booths that are at or vendors at a particular festival or event. 10% alcohol sales at the Harbor Festival would be huge. And that's something that we would not want to be going after because that really puts a hurt on the applicant. So something that's going to be palatable. At these large events, it might be just a flat rate, something that I'm not crazy about going into because it is it's something that it's a sensitive issue within this community. And I'll put it right out there because, number one, they're bringing in a lot of visitors to the area. These are large events, the Avocado Margarita Festival, Kite Festival, Music Festival, Harbor Festival. These are big. And so they're contributing to indirect revenue. They're contributing to the sales tax and the TOT. And everyone who claims to be contributing, no one, it's like a, herding cats. There's no way you can catch at all and have a real true count of what you have. So it's a speculation on most everyone's part who contributes to the sales tax and the TOT. There's some hard numbers out there and formulas that I'm sure the hoteliers and some of the other business owners have. And ours, all we really have is the hard evidence that we have as a Recreation and Parks Department are the impact studies that have been done with softball tournaments. And we certainly can understand that when 22 teams come from the Valley, they're filling the hotels and they're filling the restaurants Friday and Saturday nights and gassing up and going home on Sunday. That's our hope. So there's a significant amount of revenues that are associated with that. Hard numbers to be consistent, very accurate, tough, and very time-consuming to get. So I would say that's probably the most sensitive issue, and maybe I can try to answer your question by saying that there's no set formula. It's going to be based on the applicant's what they're presenting. Are they charging at the door or not? Some of the new festivals, last two the chamber put on, it's free admission. Music festival's free admission. So is the Avocado Margarita. So is the Beer Festival and Chili Cook-Off. They're free admissions, and they're getting participants and guests and visitors into town. And then they're basing a break-even point, I would imagine, on ticket sales and concessions on site. We certainly wouldn't want to punish their efforts by sitting on the sidelines and just looking for a handout. But we certainly want to be engaged in nonprofit groups that are doing concessions on site. They're certainly benefiting from our venues, and nothing different than a use fee on a public area use permit or hourly rate on a room.
Well, just out of curiosity, can I ask who does those studies? I know it's off topic, but it's just interesting to me.
Often,
if somebody looked into, say, the music festival and...
The last study I understand was done at the state park, and the group that did it was a Cal Poly group.
Oh, okay.
Class that was spearheaded by Bill Hendricks from the Recreation, Parks, and Tourism Department, and it's not free. Those studies do cost tens of thousands of dollars because they're very time-consuming, labor-intense, and there's a lot of quantifying raw data and trying to put that in some kind of a comprehensive results that you can actually use to estimate revenues and expenditures. So it's difficult, it's time-consuming, but it can be done. And the last group that I know that did that was the Cal Poly group, I talked about it with Professor Hendricks about a month and a half ago up at the workshop. What was that, January? He said he certainly would be entertaining that particular task, but we'd have to work on some details, particularly the money, if we were to go that way. But right now, some of those programs are canned. American Softball Association puts out several pamphlets that give you formulas and examples of softball tournaments and the types of revenues that are spun off of the dollars spent. So there are some hardball numbers, some ballpark numbers that you can get to using their formulas. We haven't taken the time to nail that down. Good news is we have added another softball tournament this summer, so we're going to have a full house out of Kaiser, which is good news for us.
Okay, thank you. I was curious.
Certainly.
Okay, I could see how that could be difficult to judge, considering, like you're saying, if they charge at the door, if they charge admission, then I'm sure it'd be on a case-by-case basis, but I would not see... I mean, I would leave item F under category 1 and under category 2. I would leave both those in there and still use them as a case-by-case basis. And also, is there any other questions for staff on any of the policies or rules? Because the commission can make suggestions to make any amendments on those items if anybody wishes to.
I'd say this looks pretty thorough and very fair. Looks like a good permit. Looks like a very good permit.
I agree.
So is there any other questions for staff at this point? No? Okay. So then I believe what we're looking for is a...
One moment, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think that since we have such a packed house, we might have lost sight of this public hearing. And even though there's no one here, we would want to recognize that we've opened and closed that particular opportunity.
That's correct. Sorry about that. At this point, we would open it up for public comment, but seeing there was no one in the audience, we... We'll close that. We will close public comment and bring it back to council. Okay, so at this point, we would be looking for, if there are no changes in any of the policy, in the policy or rules section, then we would just be looking for a recommendation to go forward using the policies and rules as is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I make a motion to accept the public use permit discussion and guidelines as is.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 None opposed? Motion will carry forward. Okay, next is item B2, a review of current procedures for amplified sound during events in the parks. Mr. Woods?
Again, Good evening, Commissioner. Chair Munoz, pardon me, and Commission. This particular item has been separated by request from City Council. They've asked us to review the noise ordinance as it pertains to public area uses in public parks. And I will start off by saying, maybe I can answer a question before it's asked, that there may have been one recent complaint about an event up at Del Mar Park, but I would want to come back at that. And there has been a couple other complaints when we had a big music concert down at 714 Embarcadero. So there's only been a couple of formal complaints, really large complaints, throughout the last couple of years. The current procedures and ordinance for amplified sound during events in the parks is outlined in your Municipal Code 9.28. I've included that for your reference. Please note that when city parks and open space are not in use for recreational programs or other city businesses, city property may be used by public groups or individuals for the social, cultural, and recreational activities. Such activities shall be in accordance with the adopted rules and policies set forth in public area use permit application as well as in Municipal Code 9.28. The guidelines are incorporated in the public area use permit, as you can see on the reverse that we've included in your previous packet, and these and the conditions. So we give them the policies that we've just talked about as well as the conditions of use, and in order to get their permit, they must comply with all those conditions. Most of the parks that host events that have amplified or live music are Del Mar Park, Lila Kaiser Park, not too often at Kaiser, but it's out there. We have some amplified things. City Park, Coleman Park, the Cloisters, Tidelands Park, and also Centennial Parkway. Some of the applications we have, one is for the Whitecaps Band. That's a city-sponsored band. They use the Vets Hall at no charge most weekends for the rehearsals. And there are about 6 weeks on Saturday that they're down at Centennial Parkway, and they play for visitors in the park. Same with the Mud Skippers. They're an offshoot of the Whitecaps Band. They also have a little four-member jam session down at the Centennial on the weekends. We've had a complaint there from a business owner, and went down there, addressed that complaint personally. I talked with the applicant, the Mud Skippers representative, personally, and we just changed the direction of the speakers and moved them back off the sidewalk a little bit, and relocation of the group and speakers, and everything's worked out well. So we'd like to continue allowing groups to meet in parks and have amplified music and sound. Captain Jimmy is down almost year-round down at Anchor Park, Anchor Memorial Park. So if you're down there, he plays quite a plethora of different instruments, so he's always fascinating to watch. As those applications come in to the public area use permit process, conditions that are set forth when an activity such as amplified music or live music is scheduled, the condition in its letter C, if you will, from Municipal Code 9.28, I want to say 030, live music, amplified music being performed by any live band or two or more persons by any or any solo performer between the hours of 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. in a residential district, and also between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. in a business or commercial district, in such a manner that is plainly audible at a distance of 50 feet from the building or the structure in which the location shall be in evidence of the violation and so forth. So basically, the music cannot be audible more than 50 feet from the area, from 2 until 7 in the commercial zones, and then from 7 to 7 on residential. And some of our parks are right next to the residentials. And this facility itself is not a commercial facility, but it's right next to our neighbors. Several years back, we had complaints about noise here. I know it's not in the park. But we amended our policy and said that events with that live music and amplified music will be terminated at 10 o'clock in the evening with the cleanup until 11. So since we've enacted that policy, we've had some more support with the neighbors, and I think they're very appreciative. So we're very much in tune with looking at situations and amending our policies if we need to. We always include this particular condition, this particular ordinance, in the conditions of use when this happens. We also request the applicant talk with nearby neighbors to notify them of the event about 2 weeks before. And in some rare occasions, such as a skateboarding down Pacific Street, where driveways would be closed, so access for personal vehicles would be hindered, we've asked that applicant to go to each resident that will be impacted and have them acknowledge that they know, and they actually sign a piece of paper that says that they were told this was happening and they had a chance to react to it. We've tried to put some conditions on the applicant to outreach to the residents of Morro Bay that might be impacted. When there is live music, I believe the one at Del Mar, that residents were notified, but the complaint came from a resident outside that notification band. They were a little further up the hill, and somehow the music, as it bounced through the amphitheater, rebounded and shot up the hill, and it was rather audible at this resident's house, and they complained. However, from Ironwood, when there would be a response from staff, it's not as loud. And so the terrain certainly plays a part on that, and different structures and whatnot. For the most part, applicants are very attentive to this particular condition and want to adhere to the policies. Venues are discussed when the applicant is requesting use, and we recognize the limitations of certain venues for potential impacts of the neighboring residents in the community. So if someone wanted to put a full-blown rock concert right at City Park, I would most likely discourage them and to steer them to a different venue that would be better suitable for the community. When events are at City Park, they are requested to talk with all the neighbors surrounding and then keep the amplified music or announcements to 50 feet from the source. And we haven't had any objections to that. So having that said and having attached Municode 9.28, specifically C, which is live music, and I think the next one, D, which is loudspeakers, amplifiers, and advertisements, also pertains. So if you'd like to discuss those particular, if you have any questions for me, I'm happy to answer those. But that concludes my report. This is a public hearing.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Woods. And at this point, we would, before we bring it back to the commission, we would open it up for public comment on item B2. And since there is no one in the audience, we will bring it back to council. So now these municipal code, I believe they're governed by or made by the city council, but the commission can make any recommendations or suggestions to staff to forward to city council if anyone sees any changes that they would like to suggest on any of the items. At this point, is there any questions or comments from the commission for Mr. Woods?
Well, I'd just like to say that this municipal code looks very thorough, and when you review it, it shows that we're in line with other types of activities. So it looks like it's a pretty good ordinance to me, and properly enforced, I think it should serve us well.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Before you go to a motion, I just want to point out the letter E under 030. is something that we generally don't put in the conditions. But I thought it was interesting that we're not allowing yelling, shouting, hooting, whistling, or singing on the public streets between 2 a.m. and 7 a.m. And I just... just to lighten the load a little bit. So
yeah.
I didn't mean to digress. Certainly go back to the motion, please.
Okay, I also agree. I see items C and D under the 9.28.030. They seem to be pretty much right on. I mean, there are restrictions for the residential area as well as the business areas on the hours. And item D pretty much covers any amplification with speakers.
If I may, Chair Munoz, really has it boils down to, are you comfortable with the current ordinance that regulates the amount of sound at the particular time of day in the parks that are adjacent to neighbors? Okay, Delma, are you comfortable with this policy as it applies to uses at Del Mar, at City Park? Generally don't get Monty Young. It's a neighborhood park. And the other parks, some, you know, down at The Rock and Coleman, it's a little different venue down there, a little bit more open. And it's more of a commercial setting. But the parks that are in neighborhoods, if the commission's comfortable with the noise ordinance as it pertains to that, then a recommendation would be to continue with current practices. If you feel that, wow, I really want to see this thing changed and it should be, you know, something different, then that's a recommendation we take to council. If they would agree, they would agendize that and staff would bring back a draft ordinance, then a final, and then a first and second reading, and so forth and so on. So we're not afraid of the process, but we want to make sure that we exhaust this issue so we don't come back to it in the near future, that we reviewed it and everyone's comfortable with it. And I think that hopefully that helps you in your deliberations at this time.
I have a question. Have you had any complaints now that we have Morro Bay, Del Mar Park fenced in for the dogs as far as barking, as far as yelling?
Probably three a day. No, I'm just kidding. Not that many. I'm a little punchy. It's been a long day. We have had... no formal complaints have been registered through our office. There have been a few people of concern that say, yeah, there is some more barking out there, and we kind of expected it. I've had, not to go off topic, but we've had some other issues regarding the design of the park. But as far as the noise, as it pertains to this particular topic, nothing that I should be bringing forward.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
Okay, so if no commissioners have any recommendations to forward on to council, which, I mean, I think this looks fine, we would be looking for a motion for staff to continue using current practices.
Well, I'd like to make that motion then, that they continue using current practices.
I'd second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 None opposed. Motion passes 5-0. Okay.
Yeah. Are we missing something?
All right. We'll move on to item C, unfinished business. And we have no unfinished business. Item D was moved forward and is completed. So we would go to item E, declaration of future agenda items. Any commissioners wish to have any future agenda items, may present them at this time. Okay. No future agenda items? I'm sorry? Yeah. I'll give you a break next month.
How's the hot water down at The Rock?
Okay, so final item would be F, looking for a motion to adjourn.
A motion to adjourn.
I second that.
Second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed? Item, we are adjourned.